Here we are, another edition of What Barry's Talking About from Barry 360. I'm Dan Blakely. On this week's program, we hear from our Sasquatch hunting friend at Trent University, who is in possession of what he believes is audio and video of Bigfoot captured in our region. Fire Prevention Week begins on Sunday with a focus this year on kitchen fires, the leading cause of fires in the home. We get some timely advice, especially with a lot of activity in the kitchen this Thanksgiving weekend. The Barry Colts went 2-for-3 to open their season. Colts commentator Gene Pereira looks back at some of the high points. But first, Barry police are looking to get more female boots on the ground, holding a Women in Policing information session October 17th, a chance for women to speak with a recruiter, review their application, and get their questions answered. Barry 360's Ian McLennan gets a few answers from Barry Constable Melanie Turner.
Why is there a need for such an event?
Well, we would really like to see more women apply. I think that they are a huge part of our community. And right now, we're just not getting the female applicants. So this would be a good opportunity to just get the word out there. If they're thinking about it, this is the time to apply.
I don't know if you have numbers or, but is there quite a ratio between the number of, you know, men that are in the service? I'm not talking civilian, but in you know, those that have got boots on the ground, so to speak.
So there are less women that do work. It is still primarily males. However, we do have an abundance of women. I think we're just sitting just around the 20% mark, which is very good. But again, it would be something that would be important to increase because they are just as much a part of our community and they represent our community as well. So what we have in the community and what we have in the service, I think there needs to be a balance. Women bring certain qualities to the table, just like all the other applicants do. Verbal de-escalation, calm demeanors. They have many skill sets, and it's just a piece of the puzzle. We just need to fill the puzzle and make the picture perfect, right? And we can do that with having a variety of different people. So that includes women.
What are the encouragement factors, you know, to join the service?
Well, it's a great career. We have benefits. We have, you're going to have a job for pretty much 30 years. And those types of careers are not typical these days. You know, you're always going to have pay. You're not going to have all those external worries with your paycheck and how week to week living expenses. So there's consistency. That this career is great for all people in that kind of capacity. However, specifically for women, there are different job opportunities for both males and women throughout their career. So if you are on the road and there's opportunities to move on to an investigative unit, for example, investigations, crimes against persons unit, you're dealing with victims of domestic violence. The victims actually have a choice of a female or a male investigator. So it's just another important point to be able to give the people who are coming to us in need in time of crisis, something that's going to make them more comfortable. And women are a part of that.
So, I'm in grade 12 or I'm in post-secondary or I'm, you know, in my 20s, I'm into a certain career. Are you looking for a certain skill set before they even come through the door? Or, you know, how do, should I go or shouldn't I go?
Well, here's the thing. According to the requirements, you need to have your Ontario secondary school diploma. However, extra education is definitely a value. It gives you more skill sets with critical thinking, a little bit more knowledge about an overview of what to experience. A lot of people go to police foundations courses or criminology. That's one route that people often take. It just gives them a little bit of time to mature and get ready for this type of world. We deal with very realistic situations and sometimes a little bit of life experience, it helps. And if you're going to get that through education or whether you're going to go out into the workforce and get it that way, they're both going to be useful. So I don't discourage either or, but sometimes it just may benefit. It depends on the individual.
Can you apply on the spot or is there an explanation there how you apply and go through the process?
So the process, it's actually on our website under Join Our Team, under Police Constable. So it's a staged approach. The first part would be submitting a complete and detailed application along with a cover letter, your resume, and any other documents that you may have. So your diplomas from college, high school, your CPR, your first aid. Those are all general requirements. You do need to have a driver's license also, and you need to either be a Canadian citizen or a permanent resident. So those are two other factors. And all the stipulations are right there on the first page, and there's a checklist there for them.
How long have you been in policing?
I'm approaching my 21st year. So I've done a variety of different things. And for me, I've loved every minute of my career.
So you've seen lots of changes, too, in terms of, you know, where women are in policing. What have been some of the big changes, and what might be some of the barriers do you think that maybe, you know, holding back somebody applying, whether it's Barrie, South Simcoe, or another service?
I love our service. I came here. This is a place I wanted to work. If you want to work and you want to commit to your community and you are a person that feels that you have something to give, this is the job for you, female or male. There's no barriers in the service. There's always opportunities for everyone to apply. There's lots of movement. I've had various opportunities, and I've had numerous different positions I've held throughout the 21 years I've worked in. I've never felt that I was persuaded not to because of my gender. Mm-hmm. So I think things are changing. I just think that we just need to get the word out there that this is a great place to work. Policing is a great career, and you have any interest, now is the time to apply.
So come through the door, and you might surprise yourself what's available.
Absolutely. And that's why we're offering this session, because it's going to be one-on-one. They're going to sit down with myself and our administrator. She's going to be with us. She does all the intake of the applications. She's the one that sees where a lot of questions may arise and is often having correspondence back and forth with the applicants. I can also answer a lot of those questions as well. In that way, it just gives the person a little bit more at ease. It's a more intimate environment. It's supposed to be relaxed. We're there for them to learn and to learn a little bit about us.
Again, this Women in Policing event takes place Tuesday, October 17th from 6 till 8 p.m. at the Barrie Police Service Training Building on Bell Farm Road. More information and a link to RSVP to the session can be found at barriepolice.ca/Women in Policing Employment Information Session. Dark shadow walking through the woods, a groaning audio recording. Could they be Sasquatch? Ryan Willis, who heads up the Sasquatch Society at Trent University in Peterborough, thinks they are. He's with Barrie 360's Will Conkin.
So you've made some discoveries in your Sasquatch search. Some audio and footage has been released on your TV show, Sasquatch University. Ryan, tell me exactly what you have found.
Yeah, so we're very fortunate to have some witnesses from across Ontario get in touch with us with some of these different pieces of evidence. So, yeah, they're pretty interesting. I guess it's hard to pick which one is my favorite, but, I really do love the audio clip we got from Gray County. It was pretty cool. And, I fully believe it's a Sasquatch. We brought it to the Ministry of Natural Resources. They can identify it as a known animal, and we brought it to some very well-known Bigfoot researchers that said, they think it's most likely a Sasquatch. So, I thought that was super cool. And then obviously the other pieces of evidence there are pretty awesome as well. And we cover all of them in the show and kind of what we find out about them.
Kind of a teaser on it. I'm going to maybe play the audio of the howl, if you're all right with that. It's about 20 seconds long, and then we can go from there. Ryan, what is your knee-jerk reaction to that sound? What does it tell you?
Yeah, I mean, my first reaction to it was kind of, what is this thing? Because it really doesn't sound like, any other animal. I've heard, I listen to a lot of, bear audio and, wolf owl, like different, very well-known animals we have here in Ontario. And, it really doesn't match with any of those. And kind of like I mentioned before, Yeah, we brought it to the Ministry of Natural Resources, and they said they couldn't, identify that as any known animal. And, we brought it to a lot of very well-known people in the Bigfoot world that, felt it was a Sasquatch that made that howl. So I'm quite convinced that that's what it was. And, just the power of it and everything like that you can hear in there is pretty cool. So, I guess that's kind of my reaction to it.
In the video that you have, the Bigfoot is actually caught walking through the woods in the daytime. Did you expect it to be in the daytime?
No, I mean, usually, when we even go looking, we always go and do it at night because, a lot of the evidence or reports really points to these creatures kind of being a little bit more nocturnal in some of their activities. But, people do see them in the day all the time. So, it wasn't a huge surprise that a video came in, of one walking around in the day. But yeah, I was able to meet with a gentleman in the Muskoka region that got the video. And, I felt he was very credible. He had a lot of emotion, about it. It was just pretty freaked out that this thing was there on his property. And, it was pretty cool to see and get to talk to him about it. And, it was a really cool video for sure.
And then, sorry, flipping right back to the sound again, was that the best, quality of hearing a howl like that?
I mean, there's been a lot of different, pieces of Bigfoot audio collected over the years, so I guess it's kind of hard to pick which one would be considered the best. I guess it's kind of up to people's opinion, but it's certainly, a very good piece, and, I think definitely could be up there with the best that's been taken over the past, 50 years or so since Bigfoot researchers have been taking out audio recording equipment into the woods. It's a very good piece for sure.
Kind of linking back to the Barrie area, are you coming back at all to do any follow-ups?
Yeah, I think we will be. And I think we probably will be this fall as well. So we were actually over there in the spring and then in the summer a little bit. But I want to go back. It's a very cool area and we get a lot of reports from there. So it's definitely a spot we'll continue going back to every few months to kind of stir up whatever we can.
Have you already started filming or have you got the green light as well for like a season two of Sasquatch University?
We haven't got, the green light and all that yet. Season one just started airing on the 25th of September. So I guess probably closer to the end of the year, we'll start having those talks with Wild TV and kind of seeing where everything goes. But for now, we're just kind of, letting season one come out and, just kind of taking it all in and, we'll see where things go.
And then if people are out in their backyards or going for a walk in the woods and they see something Bigfoot-like or maybe hear a Bigfoot noise, how and where can they report it?
Yeah, so the best way to report it is to go to our website, sasquatchuniversity.com, and we have a little contact form down at the bottom. And it's super easy to fill out and just shoot us a message and just let us know what you came across, what you saw. And, we get a ton of emails where we get back to everybody. So, probably within, hopefully the next 24 hours of sending it, but sometimes a few days, we'll see the message and get back to you and figure out what's going on.
What Barrie's Talking About is a weekly podcast featuring the best Barrie and Simcoe County have to offer and more. We've covered a lot of ground since we began more than a year ago, learned about a dating app aimed at millennials, how the Camp Hill Foundation is helping adults in Simcoe County and Muskoka with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and we spoke with provincial NDP leader Merritt Stiles about her plans for taking down the Ford government. You can get caught up and make it easy to keep up in the future by subscribing to What Barrie's Talking About through any podcast distributor. Still to come on What Barrie's Talking About, our weekly chat with Barrie Colts commentator and writer Gene Pereira, and we hone in on the biggest threat of fire in your home, the kitchen. Some timely tips as we creep up on Fire Prevention Week. Now this.
It's cool to care.
It's a well-known fact blood transfusion saves lives. It's also a well-known fact that the world relies on voluntary unpaid donations to fill the need for blood. The need for blood never ends. Canadian Blood Services in Barrie is calling on you to help save a life. Please consider donating today. Appointments are mandatory and must be booked in advance. Book today at blood.ca, through the Give Blood app, or by calling 1-888-2-DONATE.
Cool to Care is brought to you by the Peggy Hill Team. Keeping it real all the way to sold. Reach out now at PeggyHill.com.
It's Cool to Care with 107.5 Cool FM.
This is What Barry's Talking About from Barry 360. I'm Dan Blakely. Not a bad start to the OHL season for the Barrie Colts, winning two of three games. We hearken back to the week that was and look ahead to the week that will be with Barrie 360's Will Konkin and Colts writer Gene Pereira.
We're back at it, Gene. Great start for the Colts. 2-1 on the season to start. Two big wins over the Battalion last Thursday and Friday, then a 4-2 loss to the Attack. Obviously, all three would have been great, but couldn't have asked for more, I think.
No, it was a pretty good weekend overall. I mean, you know, the home and home with North Bay and all, you know, again Saturday in Owen Sound. I mean, obviously the 3-3s are always tough, but, you know, two tough opponents. And, you know, Barry got really things kicked off with a good start with a comeback shootout win over North Bay on Thursday in the home opener. And, you know, again, that was just an outstanding comeback. A big goal by Connor Punnett, set up by Edward Chalet there with in the final minute, tied things up. And then really one of the more exciting overtime periods I've seen in quite a while, with chances at both ends, outstanding saves. Ben West standing on his head for Barry. He was just outstanding that game. And then Edward Chalet, of course, in the shootout with the last shot and for Barry. And just an outstanding move to his backhand. He roofed it, and just really a thrilling way to end what was a really entertaining opening contest for Barry.
Honing in on Chalet, he recorded his fourth assist and had a point in all three of those games during that stretch. From what you've seen so far, what's his game on this team, and how is head coach Marty Williamson going to use him going forward?
Yeah, he's very highly skilled. I think he's going to be a key forward, especially on power play minutes. He's going to be one of those guys that you certainly look to at key times to produce offense. And, you know, he's just ability to find teammates. And, you know, we saw already great examples early on. You know, this is a guy that can snipe his own goals, but really impressed me is his ability to set up. I mean, to find Punnett back at the point, cross ice, and really just put it on his tape for the one-timer for the tying goal on Thursday. And then, you know, equally setting up Riley Patterson in a play that Patterson was able to split the defenseman, but kind of one of those just neat little backhand passes that just found Patterson. And, you know, it's that kind of vision where he kind of sees ahead of the play and his creativity that, you know, is going to be a huge advantage for the Colts having that kind of player in the lineup.
Has head coach Marty Williamson, has he kind of already, like, hinted to you at all that he's really liking what he's seeing?
Yeah, you know, I talked to Marty, especially after game one, you know, with what I thought was a really strong finish. And, you know, the funny thing was I thought, you know, Edward's first two periods, I mean, you know, and you remember that he's had a lot of travel lately coming back from camp with Seattle and so on, that it was really tough. And he didn't really get going. But once kind of the third period, I found once the game was on the line, he was just outstanding. And again, I think that he really showed his skill. And you know, that type of skill, you know, a lot of players have that. And just his ability to create something out of nothing, and his great vision, is just, again, to have that kind of player in your lineup. A bit of a slow start for him, which is expected, you know, new league, new team. But I'll tell you, once he got going, he was just fun to watch.
Going to the net, you had mentioned his name, Ben West. He had some big saves, also showing some glimpses of high-level play.
Kid. I mean, you know, Ben's just a local kid, a Barrie kid, and, you know, played last season and, you know, came in this year in a real tough spot with all the overagers that Barrie has in the lineup. And, you know, they've whittled that down some, but there's still going to have to be, you know, some cuts in the overager. And a lot of it, you know, his situation depends on Anson Thornton with Phoenix, who's hurt right now with a broken finger. But, you know, the expectations are that, you know, Phoenix, the Coyotes are going to return him, and if that's the case, then, you know, with the overage situation, Connor Punnett and Jacob Frasca, you know, it's going to be tough. But, I mean, what a message for Ben West to send, I think, not only to the Colts staff, but around the league, with just how good he's been in that opener, he was just outstanding, a real difference maker. And I thought in Game 3 of the weekend in Owen Sound, I mean, they lose 4-2 empty net goal, but again, there he made it. He made a highlight save that might just be the save of the year, and we see he did this early in the first weekend on a glove hand where he just absolutely robbed an Owen Sound attack player. Kudos to Ben West, and if it's not here in Barrie, you hope he finds a place.
Colts have had a break about a week, don't play till this Saturday, and it's against the Ice Dogs. On paper, an easy matchup might also be a good learning lesson for this young Colts team to not take their opponent for granted.
Yeah, I think you always got to be careful. Niagara actually played London in their opener, and they played them really tough. And, you got to be careful and not overlook opponents in the OHL. That's something that, you learn right away is that, you know, the old kind of on any given night, these are talented players. And, Niagara was impressive in their first game. I think for the Colts, talking to Marty Williamson, he was just happy to finally get, some practice time here. You know, they have the one game and they don't play again to the following, I think, Friday. So they're going to have a good amount of practice time coming up here with a full roster. It's just not something they've had with players going away to NHL camps and injuries and so forth. And the ability now to kind of get the roster, develop some chemistry, which I think Marty says, will be key. I mean, never mind working on power play and penalty kill, which is always kind of a progression earlier in the year that, you kind of get things set as you get bodies in. But I think first and foremost is developing the chemistry. We've seen a little bit of that with some of the lines. I thought Chalet and Patterson have just been outstanding together. But I think now that the ability to kind of get a full week of practice here and then another full week next week with only one game in between is going to really help them.
Colts are back on the ice Saturday night at Sadlin Arena facing the Niagara Ice Dogs. Okay, we are coming up on Fire Prevention Week across the land. And weren't you guys here last week?
We can be here every week, Dan. We love working with all of our media partners.
Deputy Fire Chief Carrie Clark and public educator Kate Foster from Barrie Fire and Emergency Service. And yes, Fire Prevention Week is next week. And what's the theme this year? Because it changes from year to year, but everything is so, so very important.
Right. Yes. The theme is all around cooking safety. So it's cooking safety starts with you. Pay attention to fire prevention. And you're right, the theme changes every year, but usually there's a rationale and reason behind why we're targeting this particular theme. And cooking-related fires are the leading cause of fire fatalities in Ontario. And we really want to make sure that we're highlighting to everyone the best cooking practices that you can exhibit in your home to be safe and avoid those potential fire fatalities.
What's the leading cause of a kitchen fire?
I think that it can be a little bit of an array, depending on situations, of course, but what we're seeing is people aren't paying attention to what it is that they're doing. They could potentially be groggy, foggy, distracted, maybe intoxicated. And in those situations, you're not able to properly attend to what it is that you're cooking. And things can get out of control really quickly when you're cooking and when you're in the kitchen. So we like to say that people need to look while they cook and stay present in the space so that they don't forget what they're doing, but also don't inadvertently, leave things on for too long. That can potentially start a cooking related fire as well.
Even leaving a pot of boiling water there and it boils right down if you've gone off and done something else can be a real problem, can't it?
Absolutely. So anytime anything is left on the stove, whether it's on the burner itself or in the vicinity of that hot burner, it has the opportunity to ignite. And once it starts, there's enough product in that zone to make it a significant fire very quickly.
I still see people come home with their groceries and they pile them on top of the stove until they put them away and the stove isn't on, but that's still not a good practice, is it?
No, we need to keep our cooking spaces free of clutter. So I like to say, before you even are in the kitchen or starting to cook, do a visual scan of your environment. Make sure there's not clutter. But all the time, there shouldn't be clutter. So keep things away. Don't store your spices and things on the ledge of your stove or oven, things can get knocked over very easily. It's not a storage space. It's a cooking space. And the other thing is that there are, you know, little children or animals running around our homes a lot of time. And so it's very easy for them to accidentally turn on a burner or knock something over. And so by just keeping that area free of clutter, you've already taken a step in the right direction.
You have some clever little tricks and sayings around cooking with oven mitts and other things. Let's run down some of those.
Sure. Some of the sayings we use are obviously look while you cook, stand by your pan. We also like to make sure that people, while they're cooking, are keeping their handles turned to the back or sides of their stove so that if someone walks by quickly, they don't accidentally catch the handle and then inadvertently take something off of the stove, which can then start a fire as well. So there are a lot of small things you can do to be extra safe in the kitchen.
Another good thing to do is you can set a timer. You can have Alexa or Google set a timer. You can, you know, put it on your phone or your watch, however it works in your space, just to remind you, because in our busy, busy world these days, it is so easy to get distracted.
One that I've heard over the years is if you have to wander away from the stove, put an oven mitt on. And that will serve as a really good reminder if you have wind up out in the garden or in another part of the house or in somebody's bedroom.
It is. That's a great tip. Yeah, you can wear an oven mitt. Sometimes we say just carry a spatula in your hand. I don't know how many times I've been just distracted. We all get distracted when we're trying to do a million things at once. But by holding a utensil or wearing an oven mitt, it gives you that visual reminder of what it is you're actually working on or what it is that you're doing, which is get back to the kitchen. Now's not the time to flip over laundry. We need to be focusing on making lunch or dinner or whatever it is.
Once in a while, grease catches fire. And there's all kinds of good advice and bad advice for that. What should we be doing? What shouldn't we be doing?
The main thing is that I want everyone to remember that water does not go on grease. So some people may have heard this saying, maybe when you were younger, your parents said, oh, you and your brother are like oil and water. That means they don't go together. So that's exactly what we like to say for grease. When you are cooking with grease, adding water to that potential cooking area can actually spread the fire and flame very quickly. And so that is not a proper way of extinguishing that fire. I like to use science to our benefit. And that means that if you get in the habit of just quite simply cooking with a lid that fits over your pot or pan really well, if you get into that habit, when and if something does get a little too crispy or it starts to kind of, we'll say cooking goes off the rails a bit, you just quite simply turn off your burner and put that lid over top. Fire can't continue if it doesn't have the oxygen and the heat. Don't grab water. Don't put water on any type of cooking fire. Use your lid to help you and turn that heat from that burner right off.
Often in our investigations of kitchen fires, we'll find that they tried to take the pan off and carry it to the sink or out the back patio door. And we find the pan on the floor. The human has been burnt from the product leaving the pan at a rapid rate of speed. And the kitchen is now aflame in multiple spaces. So your instinct might be to put it in the sink or out the back door. Just put a pan on top of it or a lid and then turn the heat off.
Yeah, cookie sheet.
Cookie sheet is a universal lid. If you keep one in that little slot between the stove and the cupboards where the pasta usually falls, if you keep one in there just for fire use, and then it slides on everything and it fits every pan.
That's the kitchen, cooking fires, but there are so many other threats around the house as well. Let's talk about some of those things that people need to be wary of. One I know has come up quite often and not, I guess, such a big problem this time of year, but people butting out their cigarettes in flower pots outside.
Yeah, smoking is another leading cause of home-related fires in Ontario, and many times it comes down to how are people actually extinguishing those cigarettes. So smoking should occur outside of the home whenever possible. That is the preference, but how you actually extinguish that cigarette matters. And if you're putting it into a pot or a planter outside, remember that that vegetation could be quite dry and easily ignite. And so we say use deep, sturdy ashtrays to extinguish your cigarettes, and don't flick them. That's the other thing, is flicking your cigarette, you don't necessarily know where it's going to land. And if you're in an apartment building and you flick it over a balcony, it could potentially land on someone's balcony below and ignite a fire. So it's kind of that, you know, citizen aspect of being a good citizen and remembering how you extinguish those cigarettes matters.
A lot of the fires that we see as well are happening in garages, because people are using their garages as sort of indoor-outdoor living spaces. So the importance of cleaning your ashtrays and your butt-out areas in your garage is critical. We've seen we're in the double digits for garage fires in Barrie just in 2023, and a lot of them are pointing back towards smokers' materials.
And is there not an issue with smoke alarms in garages, that they're not as effective? Did I hear that once, or am I mistaken?
You are never mistaken, Dan. The smoke alarms have a very sensitive temperature range. And so a garage that has big swings in temperature, have dust particles around them, have moisture issues, smoke alarms don't do well in those. They're meant to be inside your home. There are some new heat detectors on the market that can be hardwired into your home so that the heat detector will go off if there's a fire and alert the people in the home. Highly recommend, you know, if you're using your garage as an indoor-outdoor living space or extra living space, consider getting a heat detector in there, because it's still attached to your home, and it will it's often a place where fires can easily start, and there's a lot of fuel load in there.
Let's talk about smoke alarms again for a sec. You were here last week for test your smoke alarm day. Let's just remind people, if they didn't do it a week ago, that maybe they want to do it this week.
You didn't. We'll forgive you as long as you go right now and test your smoke alarms in your home. It's really important to make sure that they're all in good working order. We see too often fire-related fatalities in Ontario as a result of smoke alarms not working. That could mean the batteries have been taken out, or they actually have been taken down, or maybe they aren't in your home in the first place. So just a reminder that it is the law to have working smoke alarms in your home on every level or story of your home, and outside of those bedroom areas, anywhere that someone sleeps, you need to have a working smoke alarm, and you need to regularly test them. So testing every month is fantastic. That's a great thing to get into the habit of doing. And checking those batteries every roughly 6 months. Sometimes you can coincide that with when you change your clocks, when we jump ahead or fall back. You can also remember, I need to make sure our batteries are working in our smoke alarms and that they're in good working condition.
And this is something that would be great to engage the kids in, because they're super at reminding you you need to do this.
Yes, kids are fantastic at reminding you of everything you need to be doing a parent. So,
and they want to push the button.
They want to push the button. You know what? It's fun. I definitely do that in my home as much as possible. Encourage everyone to know how to do it, because it doesn't have to be a responsibility that falls to one person. Everyone can share the load.
And the other thing we should emphasize is an escape plan, making sure you have one, and the kids will help you with that too.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Knowing how to get out in case of a fire is so important. You only have typically less than 2 minutes to get out of your home from the time that smoke alarm sounds. So by practicing your home escape plan, it just means that your muscle memory can kick in. And if that smoke alarm happens to go off at 3 a.m, because it's never convenient, at least you know how to get out. You know any backup routes. You can get out to your meeting place and you can call 911 from there.
If people want more information, how do they go about getting it?
You can go and visit us online at barrie.ca/firesafetyawareness. We have a lot of great information on our web pages there. And you can also visit us, follow us on social media. So Instagram, Facebook, or X, just follow Barrie Fire and Emergency Service. And we are constantly posting information that may be applicable to you and hopefully help.
Thanks for helping to keep us safe. You can only do so much. Everybody else has to pick up the ball too.
Yes, that's right. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
And that's our program for this week. Thanks to Ian and Will for their input, to Matt Ladder for his technical touch, and to you for listening. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe to What Barry's Talking About, rate it, review it. You can also keep up with What Barry's Talking About at Barry360.com, on X at Barry360. Some of you can still see us on Facebook, and there's our daily Kickstart podcast available from any streaming service and on our website. I'm Dan Blakely. Hope you'll join us again next week.